Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
The name's Dan.
Today, Dan, we are 3/4 of the way through Dance with Dragons. Mm-hmm. Almost done.
Oh, boy. We got to stretch this out. We got to stretch this out for a while, Luke.
You guys might not hear from us for a while.
We'll be around. We'll be around.
We'll be around.
Before we get to that, Luke, we need to get warmed up.
Yeah.
Luke, I want to know if you've ever been to a place that you've had the thought, like, this would make an amazing fantasy setting or, like, D&D setting. And while you're thinking about that, I am going to tell you the tale of when I went to Seattle this weekend.
Okay.
Because Seattle felt like such a perfect fantasy setting in three big areas. Okay. The first is Seattle is right on a sound. So there's all these like little islands that are out of the city, like close to the city that you can take little boats to go see. They've got their own little towns and vibes to them. Some of them are like a lot more developed than others, but there's just like a bunch of them all scattered around. Fantastic. You can have so many different little towns there. They all have their own little unique vibe to them. You take a little boat to go see them. It just feels so fantasy to me. It feels very like, ooh, we're going on a little quest. What's at this town? What's going on here with these people? Like, oh, they have a crisis or not. Or maybe they're just loving life. I don't know. You have to take a little boat to get there too. So they feel a little isolated, but not too far. So you can get to a bunch of them. Anyway, that's number one.
Okay. Yes.
Number two, Pike Place Market is like an iconic market in Seattle. The thing that made it fantastical is that it feels so much bigger on the inside than it looks on the outside. This is like Diagon Alley, horrible fantasy mystic place. The Pike Place Market felt sort of magical in that you would like walk around what was the top level. It's like half a mile long. There's all these vendors. You go down a set of stairs, suddenly there's like twice as many vendors down there. You're like poking your head into like all these weird little shops. The top has like a bunch of touristy stuff, and then you get down lower and there's like a magic shop and a antique coin dealer and like a Halloween themed shop that's like vampires and monsters and like two used bookstores and like there's just
are they all also like really small and cramped in together?
Some of them are really small and cramped in. The good ones are IMO. But there's just, and you are so disoriented, right? Like I go in there, you go down like one floor and you're like, I don't know where anything is. I don't know how to get out of this place. You can walk and then you walk somewhere else and you're suddenly on this like beautiful balcony and there's like vegetables being grown there and like a great view, but you're not out of the market. You're just in an outdoor part of it that you're like, okay,
yeah.
I still don't know where I am, but this is pretty. So that incredible, very fantasy, very like, I'd love for like an aspiring young wizard or something to get lost in the market for a day or two, right?
Nice. Yes, I can see that for sure.
Get Quoth out
more
there.
More of an urban fantasy kind of situation, I guess.
For sure. For sure. The last thing, Luke.
Yeah.
Seattle has an underground city that is largely abandoned.
Ooh.
Seattle.
That's crazy.
Yep. Seattle, what they did was there was a big fire and the city decided they wanted to lift the city up, to like raise the city so that the like drainage wasn't as big of a problem. But before they did that, all these businesses started rebuilding on like the ground level. And so the city built the road like 20 feet up from the ground. So you can, so under the sidewalks are like lower underground sidewalks that you can walk around that are currently are abandoned but were used at various points in Seattle's like tenure as like this little underground sort of a city that there is like saloons and like seedy nightclubs and it was like sort of this like weird underworld that existed.
That's cool. I'm surprised I haven't heard of this.
I didn't either until people were like, oh, you need to take the underground tour in Seattle. And it's like this, it's not a very official thing. Like, it is an official tour you can take, but it's like, there's not a lot of money in it right now. It's not like super clean. Like, it's a pretty dirty place. It's not super accessible. There's no elevator. You have to like walk down some rickety stairs. But it's so cool. And it's just like it was so incredible to just imagine, you know, to just like imagine a little like a little grungy ranger coming through town, like getting in the underbelly, looking for a quest or something.
Of course, you got some inspiration for your next novel,
Luke. So much inspiration. I think it's prime. It is just like so pristine for the vibes. The fantasy vibes are pristine in Seattle. And it just was like a place that really sparked my imagination in a way that I haven't experienced in a while. And I'm curious, Luke, if you've had any places like that.
I'm trying to think while you were saying this, and nothing jumped out at me necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first thing I was going to say is New Zealand when we went.
Right, but
I feel like
that.
That's just because of Lord of the Rings and my word association there.
I also had that thought.
I feel like when there's a couple places in... This is more landscape-y than city.
Yeah.
But there's a few places in Arizona that feel very almost otherworldly, right?
Little Grand Canyon.
Well, Grand Canyon, but also there's like a stretch. I'm trying to. There's like a few places that are almost like Badlands-y, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's a few places around like Yuma-ish, and then also, have you ever been to White Sands in New Mexico?
I haven't.
A very strange place because it's like very suddenly just like super bright, just like pure sand dunes. So that's kind of what comes to mind as just like weird landscapes. But I don't know, that's kind of the best I've got. I also was thinking like when you go to New York City, right?
Yeah,
it's kind of like the grungy. Or a few places are just the grungy, crowded city sort of thing. But it's like, yeah, they make these movies all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas I feel
so
like
I don't know
Seattle,
if I have quite as good of an answer.
I feel like Seattle is sort of an undiscovered gem in that way, right?
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah.
And I think it's ripe. It's ripe for the picking.
Okay.
Maybe that will be my book, Luke.
Yeah. You've been wanting to write one for a while. I know.
Oh yeah. You know me.
Oh yeah. All right. Good trip though.
It's a great trip. Seattle was lovely. A lot of great food. Met some really nice folks. Take a trip, everybody. Take a trip. The market is very touristy, but it's also very cool. It's a rare thing that it's like that I feel is very touristy, but also has a lot of like real value built in as well.
Okay. Good to know.
So go check it out. Go check it out, everybody.
We're all going to check it out.
Anyway, so, Luke.
Anyway, let's talk about Dance with Dragons. So we read through a Victarion chapter, which is about 3/4 of the way through, and stopped at the Tyrion chapter afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Where, I'm trying to think where to start, Dan.
I want to start actually with the introduction of a theory by another character.
Okay.
In the book that I love, and I don't remember if this is at Barrowtown or when they get to Winterfell. But one of the ladies is talking about maesters and how she hates maesters because they read everybody's shit. They're constantly like telling everybody what to do, and they must be up to something. They must be up to no good because of how involved they are in everything that's going on everywhere. I buy it. The fact that this is the first time we're hearing about it makes me more inclined to believe it's true. Because the maesters actually have so much power.
Yeah.
Considering the fact that very few people are literate.
Mm-hmm.
Including people that are like high up lords.
Well, even then, like, even the ones that are literate, still the maesters read their messages, I think.
Yep. At least most of them. The maesters are also the ones giving all the medical advice, pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of power, Luke.
They do. Once they leave, they're supposed to be not really beholden to the, well, are they? I kind of forget how the organization is set up.
You're talking about like to the Citadel. They're supposed to be like the servants of the lords that they're serving rather than the Citadel.
Right.
Yes. I mean, that's a great PR claim.
Yeah.
Of course they're going to say that. but you're talking about people that have unfettered access to the means of communication in this realm and also read all the messages first they come in. There is no doubt a set of messages that gets passed from maester to maester that's like the secret messages that they don't give to anybody else. They just pull it off the raven and are like, oh, hilarious. This is so funny. I can't tell anyone, but this is... This is a good one.
Right.
The Manderleys did what now?
yeah, I think that's probably right. I kind of forget. I don't remember the person coming up with this that mentions this theory.
It's definitely in one of our like a Theon chapters.
Okay.
Okay.
Is it one of the like washerwomen people that are or whatever that?
No, I think I it's. Know. I think
it's not important necessarily, but.
Yeah. I think it was like in Barrowtown, and it was just about being against maesters and thinking they're all a bunch of conspiring.
Right. People. Which we agree with.
And I actually agree with it.
Doing science and stuff.
You know what, Luke? This actually feeds into my foundation sort of Valeria connection.
Okay.
Because right last time we talked about who's trying to keep Valeria secret, who's trying to keep everybody out. And one of the theories is that it's sort of a foundation premise where they have like all this advanced
foundation
technology,
the famous book. Sci-fi book.
Yeah. The famous sci-fi book where they're like telling everybody it's magic, but it really is technology. And the maesters are just like the pawns of them. They're like the acolytes. They're the ones who are like the priests, the technological priests that are going out and doing their bidding. So.
All right. There's potential.
I just love that the characters are getting in on the fun, you know?
Right. Yeah. Coming up with a little conspiracy theories, complaining about the people that do the science.
Yeah, rejecting the medical advice.
Dan, you got to do your own research. You're forgetting.
I'm so glad they're finally funding more research.
Yeah. No, I like that. Okay. We're going to keep an eye on the maesters from now on.
We're
going to see what Sam says
haven't.
Whenever he gets there.
Oof. I can't wait. What are they doing, Sam?
Okay. So, well, let me do a small one because it's only one chapter.
Mm-hmm.
I forget that we get an Arya section here.
Ooh, yeah, we do.
And as I know you love this because this is kind of training montage-esque.
I am such a fan of a training
montage. And famously, Dan loves a training montage.
Absolutely. Especially one that's doing weird shit that's like...
Yeah.
That's like seemingly unnecessary. That's just like, hey, we're gonna fuck you up for no reason and make you do something weird.
Yeah.
Great.
Some weird stuff where you're like, I don't know how this is gonna be really useful in the future, but it's going to be in a weird way, and I'm into that.
It's cool. It's cool.
It is cool. Arya's gonna be so awesome.
She's gonna be really good at smelling.
She's going to be able to use her other senses really well.
Look, except for the fact that your brain is going to compensate back. So, like, in about 6 months' time, she's going to rely on her eyes just as much as she did before.
Dan, it's a mindset, though.
Okay, fair enough.
You're forgetting about the mindset shift that she has accomplished.
You're right. You're right. I am forgetting about that. Go on.
But yeah, I'm loving the training montage, and I'm just very excited for future. The problem with this book and the theme of the summer that we're doing, obviously, is that like so much of this, I'm so excited for future storytelling that I don't know if we're gonna get. But let's not complain about that too much.
It's so good.
It's so good. It's yeah.
It's so good. Yeah. I mean, we also get somebody else who is in one chapter so far in this book, which is Victarion, which is also a very interesting little story that's going on with, like, his hand and how he is distrustful of Maesters as well, so... There's another point for the theory. But he's just like a really... I feel like any more than one chapter would be too much with Victarion, but he's on a really interesting quest right now.
Right. You mean the quest being to go and join up with Daenerys?
Yeah, I can't believe I forgot this guy when we were talking about who had the worst plan.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think he might have the best plan.
Mostly just because he has a bunch of ships.
Yeah, because imagining if Meereen hadn't been under siege, or even if it was, but maybe like a smaller siege, and he shows up with like 100 ships to be like, what up, Daenerys? You want to go to Westeros now? Like, that's it. She's like, yeah, actually, that's perfect. Let's go.
I agree that when you put it that way, yes, I think he does have the best plan. The problem is, and this isn't something that he would see, is that he's immediately recognizable as an insane person.
Yeah, right? he's got big bad guy energy, right?
Yeah, yeah. Where I feel like Daenerys would immediately be like, oh, I actually literally cannot be in the same room as you because... He's so different from all of her other suitors,
yes,
right?
Yes. Daenerys comes back at him with like, ooh, I actually have a boyfriend? Ah.
Because all of the other people that she interacts with are like insanely flattering and
and
courteous.
Yes.
In a very over-the-top way.
Mm-hmm.
And Victarion is the exact opposite, right? In a way that would not work, probably.
No, he would be eaten by dragons.
Like I feel like Drogo, was the opposite in a way that did work.
Yes, in the sense that Daenerys actually liked him by the end.
Yeah.
Whereas Victarion,
no, I don't think so.
She's too powerful for this to work on him.
But yeah, it is a little interesting storyline, a weird. I forget if we get another chapter with him. We'll see in the next quarter. But the bit about him seeing this priest and something weird happens is intriguing.
It's intriguing. Okay.
Pretty intriguing. Okay. Let's see. Let's. Okay. I want to jump to Tyrion and Penny for a second.
Okay. Yeah.
And I want to just say that Penny's life is so heartbreaking and like her mindset.
Yeah.
And I had this around one of the earlier chapters in this section, because she's interacting with Tyrion, who is talking with, maybe it's Jorah.
Mm-hmm.
And as Tyrion does, he like makes him really mad, which I want to flag that, because I want to talk about it after as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Penny is like, oh, you need to be careful around big people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they have a lot of power over you and stuff like that. And it's like her whole life, she's just super cautious around basically everyone, because she recognizes that everyone is capable of harming her. And it's very sad. And yes. Then also later, I forget exactly how this comes about, but it's very clear that she hasn't even considered the idea that anyone could be attracted to her. And it's very sad.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, I know that like almost every aspect of these books, these people have very terrible experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, this one, I was just like, heartbreaking for Penny.
She deserves so much. Like, she's such a sweet, innocent person. Yeah. And yeah, the fact that her life is what it is so sad. It's so tragic. And it's very interesting to see her contrast with Tyrion, right? Because Tyrion has so much power, right?
Yeah.
And it almost entirely came from the fact that he was born a Lannister.
Right, yeah.
Like, without that, Tyrion is like riding the dog in this jousting competition. Or dead. Actually, Tyrion's for sure dead if he's not.
Yeah.
Because imagining he's still as like kind of clever as he was, he is getting destroyed.
Yeah. Well, so okay, so that brings me to what I want to talk about as well about Tyrion in this exact scene, where I kind of forget. Okay, so they're on this ship, right?
Yep.
And mood is getting bad.
Yeah.
And Tyrion himself is thinks like, we need to make sure that Jorah will help us, because like the crew is getting grumpy and they might want to eat the pig or something like that.
Yes.
And he's like, we might need Jorah's help fending them off. Yeah. So I need to be on my best behavior with Jorah. And then moments late, like literally like same page or maybe next page, if not the same page, he aggressively insults Jorah intentionally, to the point where Jorah like hits him in the face,
like knocks
and
a tooth
completely
out.
Ruins their relationship. And it's like, you were just talking about how you need to maintain a good relationship because you guys are in a really precarious situation.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was just such
he
a
just
good
can't help
quip.
Himself.
It was such a good quip, though.
It was. Well, I mean, it was, he just needs to cut everyone down, basically.
Tyrion is playing for us. Tyrion is playing for an audience of us. Because right. The other thing is, no one else is there for this stuff. He is saying this to an audience of one.
Right.
Like, where is your benefit here, bud? Like,
he's insulting Jorah just for the love of the game.
Yeah, purely for the love of it. And to a certain degree, you got to respect it.
You do. You do. A true hater is Tyrion.
In the purest sense of the word, Tyrion is a hater. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about a different character that has a strange moment. So I think it was Lady Darrow, I think is her name. Theo takes her down into the crypt of Winterfell.
Okay.
And she tells him this story about how she was going to be betrothed to Brandon Stark.
Ned's older brother.
Ned's older brother, but then Ned's dad wanted to make a connection with the folks in the Riverlands, and so Catelyn, he like set up that marriage, and Lady Darrow was essentially like really spiteful about it and talking now about how she's gonna like destroy Ned Stark's bones before they can make it up there because she hates the Starks so much.
Yeah.
The thing that I want to highlight in the story, though, is when she's describing Ned's brother, he sounds so crass, and it was so jarring to hear a Stark described as like a playboy who was like a it was so strange for her to be like, yeah, he would like come to my room all really drunk and we would just like do it, and then he was like he was just like a playboy kind of, and I was like, is this a Stark? Is Ned the weirdo?
I do feel like that is out of character for how we understand Starks.
Mm-hmm. Like all these sculptures in the crypt of like really austere and like,
yeah,
the Starks. Maybe Ned has the most distinctive persona of the Starks that we've met.
Right. I mean, I do think that is the persona of the Starks in general,
yeah,
even before Ned.
Yeah.
Maybe Ned takes it to an extreme.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there are, I'm sure, outliers, like what it sounds like Ned's older brother was maybe like that. but yeah, it is not behavior you would expect from a Stark.
No. Look, it almost makes you wonder.
Ooh.
Is he a Stark? We can't do this one.
That one's crazy.
That one, I don't think is it. But
that one we'll circle back to when we have more evidence.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if there's more evidence later on.
I like it. okay, let's stay here, though, actually, at Winterfell.
Yeah.
So this is something that I think we talked about maybe last episode, which is... the Boltons, well, at least the Ramsay just creates a bad environment, right?
Yes.
This is a bit of a loose connection to that point, but it's wild how bad the team environment is in Winterfell. The Boltons have produced like such bad team chemistry that they're riding out to Stannis.
Yeah. Yeah, because if they...
That's insane. knowing what we know of Stannis' current situation.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh, we need to... we are so angry at each other in here,
yeah,
that it would be beneficial for us to go out there to fight him. What?
It's so true, especially considering that if they just hung out for like a couple days in the castle, Stannis' force would probably all die of exposure.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have to fight anybody, but instead they're fighting themselves at such a high rate that they're like, Roose is like, all right, we got to get the fuck out of here.
We got to go. We got to get out. Yeah.
Yeah. The vibes are
insane.
Rancid. Rancid vibes in there. And. I mean, I will say a part of it is this sneaky sabotage that somebody seems to be doing by killing,
yeah,
people slowly. And right. It's so first off, the Abel guy is clearly a manse raider, right? And his spear wives.
Yes.
I don't think it's them because of how adamant they are that it's not them. And I don't think they really have a reason to lie about it.
Well, didn't they kind of imply that it was them at one point? I mean, I know the most recent one wasn't them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I thought they implied that some of the other ones were.
Maybe. I don't know, though. It's hard to tell. But clearly some of them are not them, right? Like,
yeah,
they're denying at least the most recent ones.
Right.
And it begs the question, who is doing this? Now, the Manderleys are a good candidate here.
Yeah. Who they get accused.
And to be fair, they probably also took out the phrase that they supposedly sent on ahead of their force.
Yes.
As well. But Luke, you know who else might be inspired to do some crazy violence in Winterfell?
Who are we thinking?
Ramsay Bolton.
Okay.
What if this is just Ramsay being bored? Because he's used
just,
to being
he's
able...
just a psycho.
Yeah. I mean, we know he's a psycho.
Yeah.
And Roos is really quick to try and downplay these things, right? Roos is trying to avoid saying what's happening for a while.
Yeah.
Now, you could argue that that's because it would completely sour the already horrible vibes in Winterfell.
Right.
But it also could be that he's trying to cover for Ramsay because he's like, you gotta stop killing people, dude.
You gotta stop randomly murdering people.
We're barely holding things together here.
He's like, just hold off on your murderous impulses for like a couple weeks, please.
Please.
I like that. Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's like throwing people off balconies and like killing his BFFs.
Right. It's also, I mean, this is kind of going back to what I was talking about last episode, but also just like, can you not be a freak with who we're saying is Arya? Like, literally, if you would just be normal, it would be so much better.
Yeah, he can't, though. That's the thing, is he can't.
He literally, yeah, he can't at all.
You're trying to stop it's him from physically being himself, impossible for him. Luke, and I think that's pretty offensive, actually.
Right. You're right. I apologize.
Let him be who he is, Luke.
Got to.
I do want to point out, though, George does something incredible when the snow starts falling. So when the snow originally starts falling, we are in Winterfell, and it's from Theo's perspective. And the vibe I get is like, ooh, this is kind of cozy, actually. Like, there's snow building up. They're building snowmen. It's like everything's covered in white. It's like beautiful. They've got like warm places to snuggle up and like a lot of food. It's like, ooh, this actually sounds kind of nice. I like it. And then we go to Stannis' host, where we're getting the perspective of
Aisha.
Yes. And Aisha is like trudging through the snow with a broken ankle as like people are dying left and right. They're wearing like some of them are in snowshoes. Some of them are like barely able to walk. They're like people freezing to death. It sounds miserable. And it's just like the incredible contrast of the same snow that's falling, depending on if you've got like a nice cozy castle that you're hanging out in versus like having to march through it is so, like, the tonal shift of this same event is so good. The, like, depending on the context. I just loved it.
Well, that's why it was so striking that they're riding out to Stannis, right?
It's because they don't know. It's because they've been in their cozy castle too long.
Right. I will say the cozy castle gets a little worse.
Sure.
Right? There's, like a couple structures fall down, I think. And then they have to put the horses in the Great Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pooping everywhere.
Pooping everywhere, guys. Come on.
So there's some negatives. But overall, yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Very cozy. We love a little a warm hall with some snow outside. Oh, you get a good book.
A good book? A candle?
A little candle. Yeah. In the bath if you're a crazy person. So, yeah. But yes, I I just think it's funny that the Boltons and the Freys are together. Because it's like the two with the worst vibes.
Yeah, the two who... I mean, it, to a certain extent, it makes sense that they would be together. But then to have anybody else joining that group is like, something's fucked up with you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Who would be like, oh yeah, those are my guys right there. Those are my guys.
It's like... The guys who are famous for skinning people and the son is, everybody knows, is like the worst person alive. And then also they've teamed up with the group that everyone hates because they have famously broken the guest rights rule and are lying to our faces about it and have killed like at least one person in every family at this event.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. And Luke, we should say, completely dashed the hopes of the North being like an independent nation at the end of this.
Right.
Right. Because when Rob was walking, it was like, maybe we're going to be our own country now. Right. Maybe we're going to secede and Rob will be the king. How sick would that be? And the Freys are like single-handedly responsible for that not happening.
Right. To me, it's like, why can you guys not see that this isn't going to work? You know?
Great question.
It's just not going to work with the Northerners.
That's why they got to ride out, Luke.
It is. Okay. Let's stick in the North.
Mm-hmm.
But go a little farther north and talk John.
Let's go to the wall.
So... Everyone around John is just so frustratingly dumb that I would be losing my mind if I was... They're so short-sighted, everyone around him.
You're saying that they're complaining about the wildlings coming over? Is that what you're talking about?
This, and then, like, the queen and all of this stuff. It's like, you guys have got to be kidding me that you're not getting this.
I will say I think the queen is a little bit more understandable. So here's where I come from. I think anybody who saw the White Walkers or who has heard a firsthand account of the White Walkers does not compute to me that they're like, why are we letting all these wildlings in? What the fuck are we doing? Because it's like, no, there's like literal demons coming after the wildlings. Like that's who is coming to attack you next. You need help. You need as much help as you can get.
Right.
The queen, at least, like, I don't think they've seen the White Walkers. Like, maybe they've heard stories and maybe they've heard that there's some bad shit going on. But they're not, like, they haven't had firsthand experience with people that rise from the dead and are, like, impossible to kill trying to attack them.
Well, the queen one is, it's almost... The queen is frustrating just for a completely different reason.
Mm.
Because the queen is actually supportive, and Stannis are like fairly supportive of letting the wildlings through, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The queen is just really annoying.
Oh, for sure.
Because of the demands that she has and her general.
The general demeanor. Vibe. Yeah.
The other guys at the wall, when Jon just has to explain all the things that he's doing, it's like, guys, come on.
Luke, I will say, because I had this exact same thought where I was just like, this should be so obvious, guys.
Yeah.
I want you to imagine that tomorrow when you go into work, the company is like, hey guys, we actually had a little bit of a shakeup in management. And the CEO is this guy, and it is a 15-year-old kid. Literally a 15-year-old is your new boss.
Okay, he's not 15, right?
Jon Snow is either 15 or 16.
I don't know if that's right, is it?
Here's another question, Luke. Does a change in age of like 3 years on either side of that matter that much?
Kind of, to some degree, yes, but not enough. Yeah, I see your point.
Luke, we're talking about a high schooler telling you what to do. We're talking about a high schooler being like, Yeah, the wildlings are actually really dope, and some of them are hot, so I'm going to let them through.
Right, but even then it would be, like, the decision is correct, though.
Yeah, but imagine hearing it from a 15-year-old. Imagine, Luke, just try. And we're not even that old, but imagine being like a 40-year-old man who's been at the wall for decades, who has struggled through these winters, who has been with Lord Mormont and like done some tough shit, seen brothers die to the wildlings, and then suddenly this 15-year-old is like, actually our job is to protect from the White Walkers, so I'm letting them in because it's the right thing to do.
I see your point. However,
mm-hmm.
If I'm an old veteran of the wall,
yeah,
and it's like time to fight the White Walkers, it's like, all right, finally we're doing some real shit, okay?
Yeah, but we don't even have to fight them. Just seal the wall off, Luke.
Yeah, but that at least is a reasonable argument, I think.
Yeah.
That you can debate, and he does. That one I don't necessarily hate.
I don't actually agree with John there, where he's like, well, if we seal the wall off, we can't send any riders out. And it's like, what do you need to scout?
Yeah.
What are you scouting out there? The White Walkers are out there, they're fucked up. They're really bad, and they're probably gonna come for you.
I mean, okay, here's my thing, though. Like, you can kind of seal the wall anytime.
That's fair.
So I that's maybe a last-ditch effort. Mm-hmm. Maybe, like, get some infrastructure ready for if you need to suddenly seal it.
Mm-hmm.
But back to my original point.
Yeah.
John makes this argument because one guy is, like, saying that they're going back on their vows.
I love that you've taken this here.
And John reminds him of the vows, which are sick, by the way. The vows are awesome.
Okay. I'm glad we're talking about the vows. Make your point because I have a completely different point about the vows.
Okay. Interesting. And if I'm them, I'm like, okay, hell yes, actually. You know what?
Yeah, you're right. We ride.
Our like ancient enemy is finally here, and I'm high. And like, obviously, I don't want to because that's a bad experience. But this is a historic thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That now our organization, which is thousands of years old, is finally culminating in, and I'm there for it. So like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's,
let's do this crazy stuff.
I mean, 100% agree with you. Your purpose is the White Walkers. It is not wildlings. Like, they did not build a wall like this to stop wildlings from coming over.
Right.
This is,
that, like, doesn't matter.
You're finally experiencing the purpose of, like, why they have kept you up there for thousands of years. And why they built the wall in the first place. Like, you are at the forefront of understanding at a core level why you're there to be,
right.
Like, what your vows mean. The vibes are amazing. You have to be, like, hype to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Like, a little bit of you has to be like, this is sick. Like, this is what it is. This is why I'm here.
Yeah,
and you've got to be—you've got to also feel a little like, sucks to be all those other people who never got to do this, right? Who
right.
just were up here and died in the cold, trying to keep like a bunch of starving, like wildlings from getting in.
Right, that's a shitty mission. I don't believe in that mission, really.
Right, right. When this mission is good. This mission is like, so like songs.
We're
will
guarding
be written
the
about
realms
this.
Of men. Hell yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah, dude, we ride. So Luke, I 100% agree with you that the oath that they take is sick. It's so sick. But I also think it is so vague that like it okay. has to be so vague in order to be this sick. I'm just going to read you the oath
yeah.
real quick. I am the sword in the darkness. I am the watcher on the walls. I am the fire that burns against the cold, the light that brings the dawn, the horn that wakes the sleepers, the shield that guards the realms of men. Damn, goosebumps. Just listening to that. Sorry, I Luke. Know. Now can you tell me what are the policy positions I should take?
Well, Dan, whatever helps you guard the realms of men.
Yeah, what does that mean exactly? Because I can interpret that in so many ways.
Right.
Guard them. Guard them from what? Guard all of them?
Dan, yes. But
guard them.
Yeah. It's awesome, though. Have you thought about that?
Literally goosebumps when I read it, okay? It's incredible. Yeah. It's so good. But also, the only sort of actionable thing in there is I am the shield that guards the realms of men. Right. The rest is like I'm a...
Watcher on the walls. That's
okay,
actionable.
I'm watching.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what they need to do is, like, this needs to be their vows. I still stick with this as vows, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you do need a little document that's like, all right, our detailed purpose is this.
Right. We've passed this along from generation to generation of, like, what do these things actually mean?
Yeah. There should be a long record of scholarship and theory on what each of these examples really refers to.
Right. Because otherwise, Luke, I feel like the Red Lady comes along and she's like, hey, I believe in the Lord of Light who's going to banish darkness and like is all about heat and stuff. I'm hearing that and I'm like, wait a minute, that sounds a lot like our vows.
Right.
I'm like, oh, actually, wait, that feels like that might be related to what we're supposed to do up here. Come on, tell me more, lady.
It's funny because that's so true, especially for that one line in the vows.
Yeah.
But, Dan, I don't know how to describe this, and I know we say vibes too much on this show, if that's possible.
Yeah.
But it's wrong. It's not the correct thing. I know that they're like, wait, what's the line about the light?
There's two of them. I am the fire that burns against the cold, the light that brings the dawn. Those are both Rolar things.
Yes, but not quite. Because this is the north and it's cold, right?
I feel like if I'm Melisandre and I hear the oath, I'm like, yeah, that's me, guys. Like, I'm it. That's right. Me. We're the same. We're doing it.
Yeah.
I'm like, the light and the dawn and like the fire. I'm it. That's me.
Yes, I agree with that. Thematically, though, no.
You're right.
So... If I was like a person that went to the wall who was from like the south of Westeros, let's say, that doesn't worship the old gods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm in. Okay. Because, because like, what? I'm going to worship the seven up here.
No, you can't.
When this sick ass Weirwood Grove is right across. I can either take the vows, these badass vows in this church, or I can go to this ancient grove with like nine multi-millennia old weirwood trees with faces carved in them, and it's clearly very thematically consistent with the setting.
Yeah.
I'm doing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
The vows were written in front of those weirwood trees for sure.
Listen, I know we've talked about how the Lord of Light is clearly the most powerful god so far.
Yeah.
Even with my knowledge of that, I'd be like, yeah, I'm still going old gods because look where we are, guys.
100%, Luke. I the vibes at the wall are old gods for sure. Have to be. I'm glad we were talking about the oath here. I want to switch gears a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out how to say this. What is up with George and big boys? Something is up with George and really big boys.
Okay.
He, Wyman Manderly, the Illyrio, the slaver mm-hmm. who is the in yellow, who's really fat.
Yeah.
Robert Baratheon was another one from our not too distant past. There are so many hugely fat people in this fantasy mm-hmm. setting.
Yeah.
It feels like it's more than normal in a fantasy world.
Do I agree with that? I mean, okay, here's the thing, because we do see, I feel like we see so many more characters in this series than a typical fantasy series.
Okay. Fair. But the ratio that are like described as so fat they have a hard time moving.
Yeah.
And the like description that George has of them of like jiggling mounds of suet.
Yeah.
I think that's part of what I'm like trying to get at here is like George does not write them in flattering ways.
No. He very much highlights the negative aspects of it.
It feels like he's writing them in a way that is like, look at these disgusting flesh mounds.
Right, yeah. Like when one of the Freys attacks Manderly,
yes.
He says it cuts through three of his four chins, which it's like, it's kind of, you didn't need to say it that way.
Right, even, and I think Manderly is a great example because this is somebody who is like noble. Like, I feel like the Manderly character is like a good guy. He's like one of the good guys.
Yeah.
And even then, he is like a gross fat boy. He's not like a jolly, like cool fat guy who gets to have other descriptors about him. He's just like a big blubbering fat guy.
Right. It's like the only thing about him that you hear about.
Yeah. Yeah. Ah, what's up, George? Why?
It is a lot. I'll give you that. I agree.
I don't know.
Okay. We haven't talked Daenerys yet.
Let's go. Let's go to Meereen.
So I actually don't have it like much specific to say about this. But we're excited for Dany to finally ride a dragon.
Oh, I feel like I've been waiting for 5 books.
Waiting? Yeah, it's been too long.
I think it's interesting that Dany thought, as a lot of people do, that a marriage could fix her broken relationship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, girl, this is not working. It's not going to work for you.
Right. It was like pretty immediately obvious that he was able to stop the murders within the same day that you asked him to.
Yeah, because like he was cool with it.
Right. He was clearly the one of everybody kind of knows this, right? Everybody kind of knows that he is involved in this. So it's like he's probably not gonna be super reliable.
Yeah, and like you get to not have slaves just within the bounds of your city anymore.
Right.
That doesn't feel like a great outcome.
Yeah,
and it's clear that like your husband kind of loves slavery. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, he clearly kind of loves it.
Well, why wouldn't he, right? He was one of the biggest families.
Yeah, so like, what did you think was gonna happen?
Right.
I get that she was kind of between a rock and a hard place, but like, feels like there needed to be an alternative. We needed some lateral thinking here, rather than just like, well, a queen's got to get married. That's what a queen does.
Right. Yeah, it's a tough one. It does immediately turn around with Drogo. Drogon?
Yeah, Drogon. Which, like, we needed a little Deus Ex Dragon. Well, Dragon Ex Machina, I should say.
That's a good one. Okay. Are we worried about the other two? What's going on there?
I am, actually. That's one of my biggest concerns, Luke. I do think that they are protected because of the nature, like, because of their nature, because they're valuable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they're going to be just, like, straight murdered.
Yeah.
But I also think, who's watching out for them?
Just let them out, honestly. Just open the gates.
That's not going to end poorly at all.
No. It'll be rough in the short term, I'm sure.
Well, maybe they'll find their way home, you know.
I hope so.
To Westeros. I hope so.
I don't even know much more to say about the Dany situation.
It's tough, and I feel like she was in a circumstance where there was literally no way out. So her getting on a dragon is like, yep, that makes sense. Get on out here, Dany.
It is funny. I don't know what happens next, right? But it would be funny for her to just leave. Everyone coming to her, and as soon as they get there, she leaves on a dragon.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. I kind of love that.
I mean, that's the theory about Valyria.
What do you mean?
They just fucked off. They were just like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. I'm out.
Right.
We're seeing it. We're seeing it play out in real life.
Yeah. It's too much.
It's way too
much. Just leave on your dragon.
I do also want to critique Dany here for just a little bit.
Okay, careful.
She seems to ride really hard for the Dothraki.
Yeah.
They were super into slavery too, guys.
Yes, very much so.
Like, they sold a bunch of people. You were sold into slavery, essentially, Dany.
Basically, right.
To the Dothraki.
Well, the Dothraki are, like, terrible.
Yeah, but she rides so hard
They just go around attacking people and stealing all their stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not it's just not a very ethical society in general. So, yeah, I see your point. Yeah.
They're like the Greyjoys of the land.
Right.
But somehow less honorable?
Right. They're kind of badass, though, Dan.
They are pretty badass, now that you mention that.
So, they got bells in their hair?
No rules, just right.
But, yeah, she is too into them. I don't know. We were worried about Tyrion there for a second. Almost got eaten by a lion.
So close. Damn. Thanks, Dany.
It was kind of fun seeing, like, I think it's all from Dany's perspective, but you see all the different characters that Tyrion has interacted with described just, like, very quickly.
Yeah.
Like your bird soldiers. That was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we got them back. I agree. Yeah, I thought the, like, revisiting of characters was very fun.
Yeah.
Those were actually from Tyrion's perspective, the bird soldiers.
Oh, okay. Because
that's when he got sold to them.
Yeah.
Dany hadn't seen him yet. But, yeah, I do like this sort of confluence of characters that we're getting a second perspective on.
Right. It's a whole mess. It's a whole mess out there.
Whoo, boy. He's got a lot to wrap up, George.
Can't believe he's finishing the series in this next quarter.
Yeah, crazy, huh? Crazy. Before we wrap, Luke.
Yeah.
We get one chapter with Cersei.
Yes.
Right at the end here. I just want to know your feelings about Cersei's circumstance that she's in right now. Like, is this good or is this not good? Like, are we happy that Cersei is here? Is this like a thing where it's like, yeah, Cersei, you actually kind of deserve this treatment you're currently getting? Or is this like, this might be a little much?
So I kind of forget a little bit of the details because it's been so long, and this plot line has a lot of little political machinations.
Yes.
I do feel like... I feel like she kind of deserves a lot of her current situation. It is bad and a little over the top, and kind of you get a situation where I don't know if justice is quite being done correctly, right?
Yeah.
Like the way they do trials and everything.
Yeah.
Cuz you can't torture people into confessing. Because they are torturing her into confession, right?
Yeah, they're sleep depriving
essentially.
Her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think, Luke, like, what... So, Cersei, I think, is an interesting character because she's clearly, like, a bad person.
Yeah.
What do we think Cersei has done that warrants this treatment, right? Like, what are the actions she's taken that are like, oh, yeah, that's evil. You really deserve this for doing that thing.
Right.
Because, like, I get... She, like, cheated on her husband. She's not even the one who pushed Bran out the window. Like, Jaime did that.
Right.
Cersei, like, has tried...
She murdered her husband, right?
I mean, she set him up to be murdered, yeah.
She planned the murder.
But he also sounds like he was shit. He sounds like he was a bad guy. Granted, she was also sleeping with her brother and, like, wanted him to die. But
she also falsely accuses what's her name?
Marjorie?
Why am I? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But like that's political, right? Like she is like politically maneuvering. She's playing the Game of Thrones, right?
Sure.
And I think like, yes, you can be held accountable for fucked up things you do there. But I don't think it's as like evil as like Ramsay Bolton is somebody that I'm like, oh, any of the things that you've done deserve this kind of a treatment. But Cersei is sort of like bad at being political, but she's still trying to be like political in a way. Like Tyrion does a lot of the same things. He's just way better at it.
Right.
I mean,
a lot of it is because we obviously know that Cersei is set up to not be on the side that we want to win.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think that's kind of a lot of it, honestly.
Well, and I do think she is a bad person. Like, I think Cersei is, like, gross, and I would not want to be on a team with Cersei.
Yeah.
But I don't know if she's done, like, anything really evil, anything that's really, like, just, like, objectively...
She does things that are very selfish.
Yes.
I think. Whereas I feel like what you're looking at as evil is like doing very bad things just for the purpose of doing bad things, kind of.
Yes. Yes.
Whereas I feel like she does the bad things out of a selfish place, which feels less evil and more just like, I'm not rooting for you.
Right. Right. But even when she's giving the confession, right? When they're asking her, like, what she's done.
Yeah.
Right? She, like, sleeps with a bunch of people.
Right. I did have a little mini note here that was like, Cersei didn't really confess to anything bad.
No.
Right?
No.
The only thing she really confessed to is sleeping with someone after she was a widow.
Correct.
Which is like, that's fine.
Right. Right. I just think like the crimes that she's being tortured for.
Yeah.
Like I of course am kind of taking a little bit of enjoyment in her getting brought down a peg because she's been so high and mighty for no reason this whole time.
Yeah.
And so to a certain degree, I'm like, this is satisfying.
Right.
But it's also like, is this really deserved? Or are we just like reveling in her getting bullied by somebody else?
I mean, I think it's both, probably.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Like, we know that there are people that are way evil, more evil. Like, Ramsay, obviously, as you mentioned. And people with, like, more negative effects, probably.
I mean, I think...
Although, she's really powerful. So.
I think Tywin was worse than her.
Right. This is the other one I was thinking of, where, like... Yeah. I don't know. But I feel like we would get a lot of satisfaction out of Tywin being beaten as well.
Yeah, I think that's why when he gets like laid in the sept and it stinks for like 3 days, it's really fun.
Right. Yeah, it's awesome.
Like when the whole place reeks because of how bad Tywin's body smelled, it was like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just feel like Cersei... And Cersei isn't always just like spiteful and evil, right? Like there were times when she was... talking to Sansa that she was not just trying to make Sansa suffer. Like occasionally it felt like she was trying to get Sansa just to comply.
Right.
And did she go about it in a great way? No. Did she have like a blind spot for her kids? Yeah. Was Joffrey evil? Now, if Joffrey had been here, different story, right?
Right. Right.
I honestly, when Cersei is making her claim of like, I was just looking out for my kids, I was kind of sympathetic to that. I was kind of like,
right, because that is kind of true.
Yeah, I think she is, like, a lot of her motivation is trying to protect her children.
Right.
Ah.
She does just go about it in an insane way, though.
Yeah, she's not good at it, but she's doing it.
Right.
It's kind of noble in a twisted way. I just feel like her... It's tough with Cersei. It's tough.
Sure. I'll grant you that, I guess.
I'm, like, at war every time I see her, like, getting humbled. Because on the one hand, I'm like, yeah, this is... You weren't nearly as smart as you thought you were, and you do deserve to be humbled a little bit. But also, like, she didn't really deserve this much, though.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm still kind of here for it, though.
Yeah. Shh. Before we wrap, Luke, George posted on his blog just this week, actually. And if you haven't checked that out, it's very short. George sounds like he's really going through it right now. So,
yeah.
On the offhand that George is listening, George, we love your books. I hope you're doing well. This whole series is done really in jest with these authors. Being an author is really hard from the few authors that we've talked to on the pod. And
right.
I think these books are really fun, and I think we should all kind of celebrate that these books are out there and that George has given us these books and really shared this story with us. And you know, this is just for fun. We hope George is doing really well. And
we do. Praying for George.
And wish him the best. Yeah. Whether or not, you know, a new book would be great, but I just hope that George is doing all right.
Right.
So yeah, if you haven't checked it out, he posted on his blog recently, and you know, maybe send him some good words, if you want to tweet at him or wherever he sees social media.
Well said.
But anyway. Luke, we are wrapping up A Dance with Dragons next week.
Yep. End of an era.
End of an era. Man, it's been a saga, Luke. I feel like we started this pod on the very first book, no?
I don't remember, honestly.
Actually, it was a Sando. We started with Elantris.
I think it was a Sando. We started with Elantris.
That's
yeah.
right. But Game of Thrones was pretty shortly thereafter.
Game of Thrones was early, so...
So, folks, you were here. You are here, and we'll be there next week, bringing the hot takes. Mm-hmm.
And being dumb nerds.